Welcome to Torah Timecha, Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Shira Shaiwitz, and today we'll be studying Shoftim, Perek Yud Chet, Chapter 18. Once again, Chapter 18 begins with that same refrain that we saw in Chapter 17. Bayamim Haheim Ein Melech B'Israel. In those days, there was no king of Israel. And as we mentioned last time, these last few Perekim are giving us a thesis that there is no king in Israel, and therefore at this time people are doing whatever they want. Anarchy is ruling, there's no justice, and the way that these prakim tell us the story is really tells this message through a story, instead of giving us, you know, bullet by bullet points of an argument why it makes sense to have a king as a leader at this time. Instead, we have this thesis that there is no king and therefore people do whatever they want. And then we have stories that really play it out to us in a very powerful way. Stories are the best way to educate people. And we have stories that tell us, what is life like when there is no king in Israel at this time? And we're actually in the middle of a story that we began in Perek Yud Zayin, and that was the story of Pesel Micha, the idolatry that was set up by Micha. And if you remember the first two parts of the story we saw yesterday, which was that Micha set up with some money that he had stolen from his mother, he set up an idolatrous, a pesel, idolatrous worship area for him to worship. Perhaps he thinks he's worshiping God. It's not actually totally clear, but he's certainly using pagan worship in order to worship God. And he hires a Levi to help him out to be the Kohen for his shrine. And that's really where we left things off. So now we're going about to continue our story. Pasuk Aleph, Bayamim Ahem in Melech Bisrael. At that time, there was no king in Israel. Ubayamim Ahem, Shevet Hadani mevakesh lo nachala lashevet. So at that time, Shevet Dan was looking for a nachala to live. Ki lo nafla lo ad hayom ahu betoch shevtei Yisrael banachala, because they hadn't found a satisfactory nachala. Now, perhaps this is one of the reasons that we mentioned this last time also, that these stories very likely occurred at the beginning of Sefer Shoftim, at the beginning of the time period, and they're put here to make the point of what life looks like when there's no structured, centralized leadership. But perhaps this is at the beginning of the period where they're still looking for land. Or maybe Shevet Dan was pushed out by the Plishtim and they're looking for land. They have to move northward in order to find land. In any case, Shevet Dan needs to find more land. So, and one I'll also point out here, they're at this alone. Like we've seen throughout Sefer Shoftim, there are no other tribes that are helping them. Everybody is working for their own causes. So Shevet Dan sends out a few people north to find more land. They end up in Har Ephraim, and lo and behold, they come to the house of Micha. While they're there, they encounter the Levi, who was running the shrine, the idolatrous shrine there, and they ask him, "What are you doing here?" He explains that he's paid by Micha to be a Kohen. So they turn to him in Pasuk Hey, and they say, "Vayomer lo, sha'alna be'elohim v'neda hatatzliach darkeni asher anachnu holchim alea." So go ask your God, are we going to be successful in our mission that we're going to? And in Pasuk Zayin, "Vayomer lahem ha'kohen," the Kohen says, "Lechu la'shalom." Go in peace. Noach Hashem darkechem asher telchuba. It's interesting. He uses the word, when he says Hashem here, he uses yud kei vav kei. Perhaps he is speaking about Hashem. We discussed this confusion of being this idolatrous worship that's mixed in with worship of Hashem. But he says, you know, God will says go about the path that you will go about. So they go and they find the town of Laish. And they see here, this is in Pasuk Zayin, Vayiru et ha'am asher bekirba yoshevet lebetach, ki mishpat sidonim shoket vivoteach. They find this nation, the nation living there in Laish. This is probably the Tzidonim. And they're sitting there quietly, not bothering anybody, kind of self-sufficient. And they see that this is going to be a very easy town to overtake. And this is a city that they can conquer easily. So they return back to Dan. They tell them what they saw. They say, "Come, let's conquer this area." So 600 people from Dan come, all soldiered up, ready to fight Laish. Now, on their way back to Laish, they stop again at the house of Micha. And they come, and when they come to the house of Micha, they decide, you know what? Let's take it. So they take the pesel, the ha'ephod, the ha'trafim, ha'masecha, all of the things that Micha has built to create his little cult that he had in his home, and they take everything with them. Vayomar lehem ha-kohen, so this is in Yurchet, the kohen turns to them and he says, Ma atem osim, what are you doing? Vayomar lo, they say to him, Hacharesh, be quiet. Sim yarcha al picha, cover your mouth. V'lech imanu, come with us. V'heye lanu la'avu le'kohen. So first of all, they don't really give him a choice. They say, you know, we're taking all the things. We want to set up a house of worship in Dan. And you can, no say, you should come, you need to come with us. That's an order. But then they tell him, you know what? The truth is, Hatov heyotcha kohen lebeit ish achad, o heyotcha kohen leshevet lemishpacha b'Yisrael. Think about it, though. Isn't it better for you? Would you rather be small potatoes here in just the house of Micha? Or maybe you could come with us. If you come with us, you can be the head of an entire shevet. And in Pasuk Chaf, vayitav leif hakohen, the kohen realizes, hey, this is a good deal for me. Vayikacha te'evod v'etatrafim v'etapesel v'havo b'kerav ha'am. And he takes all of the different cultic items that they've built, the ephod, the trafim, the pesel, and he takes them with him, and they start to begin to travel off to go to Dan. Now, Micha finds out, he's not happy about this, so he starts chasing them. And they turn to him, and they treat him like he's ridiculous. They say, what are you doing? Why are you following us? And in Pasuk Chaf Dalet, he answers, Vayomer et Elohai Asher Asiti Lakachtem. Right, you took all the gods that I made, the Eta Kohen, and also the Kohen, Betelchu, Umali Od, Umaze Tomru Alei Malach, and now I don't have anything, and why are you telling me, why are you following me? Of course, I'm frustrated, I'm furious. And the people of Dan respond to him, and they say, you better be careful, Micha, we are bitter people, and if you don't stop following us or crying out, you and your family are in danger. So Micha falls back because one of the points, the goals of the story is trying to convey is that power always wins. So they come and they take everything that Micha made. Actually, the Pasuk emphasizes that, Pasuk Chav Zayin, V'hima lachu et asher asa Micha, they took what's not theirs. V'yetza kohen asher hayalo, and they took his kohen. V'yavo ad Laish, they come to Laish, which is an am shoket uvoteach. It's a peaceful, quiet city, and they very easily overtake it. Okay, and they call that place Dan, and it becomes a place where Shevet Dan lives. And then we come to the end of the parak, Pasuk Lamed, Vayakimu lahem b'nei Dan et hapasel. So b'nei Dan, now, once they've settled into their new place, they take the pesel, they take the idolatry that was created by Micha. V'yonatan ben Gershom ben Menashe, hu vanav hayu kohanim l'shevet hadani ad yom galut ha'aretz. We're going to come back to that in just a moment, but they also established the kohen as the one who is running this idolatrous shrine. And then the parak ends in Pasuk Lamed Aleph, Vayasimu lahem et pesel micha asher asa kol yimei heyot beit helukim b'shilo. And this pesel, this idolatry that Micha created, and I will say here also that here there's no ambivalence about like, well, was it really for God? Was it for idolatry? Ultimately, it ended up pesel. It was for idolatry. And this remained in Dan all the days that the Beit Elohim, the house that was made for God, was in Shiloh. So it wasn't that there was no option to worship in the more physical way that the Mishkan or offered. That was right there for them in Shiloh according to the mitzvot of Hashem. But now there's also Pesel Micha, and that becomes the other option that remains all through the time that the Mishkan stood in Shiloh. And this was a choice now that people would make. Where do you go? And I will say also very likely that this is not the only story. This is one story of an alternative idolatrous shrine that was built. But probably there were many others as well. And really this, I'm just close by making two points here. So one is, what we saw here was, to review, that when Shevet Dan is looking to conquer more land northward, they stop at Micha. Perhaps he hosted them. Maybe he also had an inn, that was part of what he did. And they find out about the cult that Micha has built, this pesel that he's built. They find out about his kohen. And on their way to conquer the city of Laish, they take the Kohen with them and they take along all the idolatrous effects that he's built, that he uses to worship. And despite Micha's protest, they tell him, you have no power over us. And they set that up to be with them all the time that the Mishkan was in Shiloh. And Ya'ira Amit points out that there is really not one positive character in this story. And it's almost like a kal vachomer, like whatever Micha does, they do, the people of Dan do the same, but they do it worse. So, for example, Micha builds a Pesel Masecha. He builds idolatry, and they steal his idolatry. So they also worship it, but they take it from him. Micha steals money from his mother. They, the people of Dan, stole from him everything that Micha had built. Micha hires the Levi to worship in the shrine that he set up with money. They entice him with kavod. And yet, despite the fact that there is no positive character here and everybody is doing wrong, everybody is telling themselves at the same times that they're right and nobody is punished. And that's really the point here, trying to emphasize that without the centralized leadership, people can do whatever they want. They can convince themselves that they're correct and they will have no consequences. And really what's trying to say is look how society is breaking down, both in terms of the way that people are relating to Hashem and the way that people are relating to each other, because very often those two are always intertwined. But just one last closing point. I said I would come back to the penultimate pasuk, the second to last pasuk, where it says we find out the name when Dan sets up the Pesel in their new area, in their city, then we find out the name of the Kohen who's been serving there. And all through, we did not know his name. He was called a Na'ar, a young boy, a young lad. He was called a Kohen. He was a Levi. But then we find out in Pasuk Lamed who he is. And Pasuk Lamed says, who was this Kohen? Yonatan ben Gershom ben Menashe. And he was the Kohen, he and then his child, his children that followed him, they were the Kohanim for Shevet Dan until the exile. So why this late disclosure? Why not tell us his name at the beginning? And what is the significance anyway of Yonatan ben Gershom ben Menashe? So there's an interesting thing here. If you look at the word Menashe inside, you can see that this nun is a dangling nun. And actually, it looks like it's something that was a tikkun soferim. It's added later, meaning it's added by the editors in the sense that really what it should have said is Yonatan, who was the Kohen? Yonatan ben Gershom ben Moshe. Yonatan, the son of Gershom, who was the son of Moshe. And the nun is added on later. So first of all, this is one of the proofs that Rashi and others use to say that this actually happened much earlier, because we're talking now about the third generation after Yitziat Mitzrayim. We're talking about the grandchild of Moshe. But why then is, we have two questions here. First of all, if Yonatan is the grandson of Moshe, then why does it say Menashe? And also, why is this left until the end to share this with us? So Rashi says on the words Ben Menashe, Mipnei Kvodo Shel Moshe Katuv Nun Lishanot Et Hashem. Because of the kavod of Moshe, we really don't want to blemish Moshe's name, so we added in the Nun, the Sofrim added in the Nun, the scribes added in the Nun, so as not to embarrass Moshe, that look what happened, look who his grandson is. V'nichtav tluya, but it's written dangling, lomar shalohaya Menashe ela Moshe, that it wasn't really Menashe, right? And Menashe is, other commentaries say that it's a reference to the king Menashe, who was an evil king, and let's just attribute him to Menashe instead of Moshe. But then dangling nun is so that we actually will know that we really are talking about Yehonatan, the son of Gershom, who was the son of Moshe, and we're not talking about Menashe. We're talking about Moshe Rabbeinu's grandson. And what is the significance of that? What do we make of that? And why is this left till the end? So I think it's left till the end really for this shock factor. We're told the story about deprivation, about the disintegration of society. And at the heart of this is a young opportunist whose name is Yehonatan. We don't know that till later, but who's wandering around. He's a Levi. He's supposed to be teaching. That's a job of the Levi. But instead, he's wandering around looking for work. He decides to work in the idolatrous shrine that Micha has built, and he does that for money. But when he finds out that he can have more glory, he happily leaves Micha, who has treated him like a son, and leaves him with no qualms, and goes on his way. And the shock factor, really, of seeing this disintegration, and by the end of the story, we don't come into it with any preconceived notions. All we know is that here's this Levi who came into this job, and we follow his story, and we follow how willing he is to give up on his relationships with God, his relationships with others, those who have supported him. And only at the end do we find out, wow, this Kohen, this not really a Kohen, this Levi is the grandchild of Moshe Rabbeinu. And I think that shock factor is safe for us so that we can see how quickly this disintegration happened that we saw. We saw this also at the very beginning of Sefer Shoftim, that as soon as Yoshua died, this was what happened. In the absence of the leadership of Moshe and then the absence of the leadership of Yoshua, look how quickly things fell apart. And what better way to make that point and to bring it home by showing us that the actual grandchild of Moshe Rabbeinu, how far he has fallen. Thank you for studying together. Le'iloi Nishmat Frida Bat Moshe Eliyahu.